Mr. Valance, Reel 12. We're talking about the end of the war. You were about to move into Denmark, but well, do you remember the day you heard about the end of the war, or a V-Day, the 8th of May?
Yes, I do. I think we were told that the end was imminent 2 or 3 days ahead, and we moved up in the station Crossway towards the Danish frontier, waiting, still thinking, and looking forward to going into Denmark.
looking forward to?
To see what Denmark was like, yes.
Not looking forward to more fighting?
No, but well, we realised that it was really at an end. But coming down there in that area, there were line after line, column after column of German soldiers, whom the army coming down from Denmark, I suppose. And we just made them pile their weapons up, huge piles, and they went onto the POW cages somewhere. But there were literally thousands upon thousands of them. Quite a sight to see. And then it ended, and we made a huge bonfire. Believe it or not, the centre of it was a petrol tank. It wasn't there actually before. Petrol bombs went out. We drove that in, and whatever else we could find, the bomb, this huge bonfire. And we had it at night with a lot of beer. We fired off all varied pistols and whatever pyrotechnics we had, and that was the end of it.
How did you feel yourself, you know, yourself at that time?
I felt greatly relieved and extremely lucky. Very good. And we stayed up there for quite a while. I remember we collected some horses together and we had little stables. Riding around the place.
Was this before you went to Bredstedt, or is that when you were?
Before I went, yes. And that was it, as far as we were concerned. It was all over. Let's get home.
So that's when you went to Bredstedt, quite soon. You wouldn't be at Bredstedt long, would you?
No. We were there a few weeks.
And what was happening at Bredstedt?
Well, nothing much, really. You see, everybody was given a demob number, or a release number. Those who had been called up first were given the lowest numbers, and they were to be demobilized. And my number was 44. I missed out for those 2 or 3 years. And we were cleaning up the tanks, sorting them out. A lot of chaps were going home, people were going on leave. And
what about the non-fraternisation rules and how you got on with Jews?
Yes, non-fraternisation was enforced.
What did you think of that?
Well, I was quite happy with it. I think most people were, because didn't really have any great love for the Germans. We see us taught to hate them, and a good German is a dead man.
And that took a while to die down?
Yes.
If it did?
Yes. But, well, you can't really live amongst people and go on disliking them, particularly when they're in such a poor state. They had no food, and they had no transport, because their cities were bombed to smithereens. all these things start with the children and then it leads to another.
So you became friendlier?
Yes, yes. The soldiers give children sweets and then the parents start to talk to them and things take their natural course and we just become friendlier.
What about the black market? Were you aware of black market activities?
Well...
Or did you have a go?
Yes, no, I didn't have a go. It wasn't anything I wanted. Well, I did. Now, I acquired a very good camera. Really, that's I think probably gave a bottle of whiskey for that or something like that. I can't remember. And there was a black market, certainly.
Were you, I mean, was it? It was quite big in some places. What was it like there?
Well, I don't know. I believe it was, yes. But I mean, only as far as we were concerned, it was just petty black market. I believe there were cases where things were sold for large sums of money and so on. But the money was pretty worthless. And at one stage, I had a collection of old German notes. Thousands of notes and things, but they weren't worth anything.
Anything happened while you were there? Or was it just a quiet period?
Just a quiet spell. We started to get back to peacetime soldiering, I suppose.
How did you react to that?
Well, quite all right, really. I'm just looking forward to eventually getting out of there.
But so spit and polish didn't bother you that much?
No, I didn't like it. But it had to be done. So, but by this time, as a sergeant, I didn't really do all that much spit and polish.
And what was the name? Because you weren't there long, were you? Because you went to the first, didn't you?
Yes. Well, that of course, you see, the utopia came to an end when we were degraded one day and told that all over a certain group, that's a demon group, all over a certain number, I can't remember which, say 24, 25 or 30, would go to the first fighting force. And all of their low group members would come to the second fighting force. Second fighting force would be the men who'd be released and the regiment disbanded. And the first fighting force, which I was to be a member, would train on Churchill tanks called crocodiles, which were in fact flamethrowers. And that our job would be out in the Far East against Japan. And our strength then.
How did you feel? I mean.
Well, felt hard done by, really. Felt like, you know, we won the war, now we've got to go fight another one. And having survived this one, we'll never survive that sort of thing. But there you are, we had to get on with it and do it. And we moved somewhere else to where the first fighting force was. I don't remember where.
Do you remember where that was?
I don't.
In Germany, then?
Oh, in Germany. And started to train on Churchill tanks.
Now, what were the characteristics of the Churchill crocodile, the flamethrowers?
Well,
you'd be a tank commander still.
Yes. The Churchill tank was a so-called infantry tank. Its top speed was about 18 miles an hour. It was heavily armoured defensively. And it towed a huge trailer, which was filled rather with this inflammable liquid, I forget what that was called, petroleum jelly, which was fled by pipes through the tank and into the co-drivers compartment, instead of him having a machine gun there, he had a flames hanging gun. The range was only about 180 yards maximum. The effective range was about 80 yards. And you fired a shot, dry shot first of all, get the stuff splattered onto the target, and then fired a live shot or a flame shot to set it all off. So by the essence of it, you had to get up very close to the
What did you think of it as a weapon?
Deadly. Deadly. Terrific. If it was against you. Because this stuff, if it got onto anybody, it burned and they couldn't brush it off. It stuck.
What was it exactly?
It was best description I give, sort of petronium jelly. And, it was almost solid, but it was a jelly. And you fired, you could see this stick of it going. And if it wasn't flamed, it would just splash all over the vicinity where it landed. And then you send a flame over.
And the flame would be the same stuff, only that set light.
It would be ignited.
So you'd
you could fire it dry, as we call it, you see, or ignite. Quite a good time.
It sounds like a dangerous weapon for the crew as well, in
very,
a tank.
Very. I remember, the village where we were, I can't remember its name, we had two sergeants from the intelligence corps come and ask if they could stay with us. And they had information that one of our bombers had come down in the vicinity and that the survivors of the crew had been murdered. And they said their job was to bring the murderers to book. And I remember saying to them, well, that's impossible then, that nobody's ever going to tell you who did it. And they said, oh yes, they will. We'll interview everybody in the village to start off with. And somebody will give something away, and then we'll tell others what we know, and eventually we will find them. And they did. After about 5 weeks, they found, I think, 7 people who were taken off to be tried for these murders, which I thought was really remarkable. Well, I could come and do that. But to bring this to a close, we got to the state where we were fully trained, and our tanks were loaded, I think at Hamburg, onto ships, and they were going out to the Far East. And we were to come back to the UK on 7 days embarkation leave. Lo and behold, I think the first day of our leave, the first atomic bomb was dropped. And before the week was up, the war in Japan was over. Much to our relief. We never saw our tanks again. Don't know what happened to them. Really, that was the end of the story.
Where were you then? What happened then? You come back off your leave back to Germany, would you?
Yes, we went back to Germany, and the regiment was broken up, and those who were still high numbers, like myself, were sent to other regiments. In my case, I was sent to the 8th Hussars. I sent on leave and told that I would be sent a telegram telling me where to go. And I didn't get a telegram. And so when my leave was up, I thought, well, what should I do now? I might as well go back to Germany. And on the way back, I met a pal of mine, and I said, well, where are you going? He said, well, I've been posted to the Royals. I thought, well, I'll come along with you then. And we got to the Royals, and he was welcomed, and they said, well, Valance, we haven't heard of you, but you're welcome. We meet people. And I stayed there for, I suppose, a month. And they said, oh, no, there's been a mistake. We should have gone to the 8th Hussars. So I duly went to the 8th Hussars and then at Lingham.
Where? Where's that?
Lingham. L-I-N-G-E-N. It's near the Dutch border to Germany. And all they said, oh, well, yes, we've been expecting you for some time. I could have been on leave all this time. And there I started off. First job we had there, I remember, was to unload a train with 1,000 tons of coke to use in the boilers of the barracks in hot water.
And what tanks did they have?
They probably had acquired from the Italian game, which of course was broken up.
And what were you doing in Lingen? But I mean, only in outline.
Well, the one adventure we had was when about the Berlin Airlift time.
So you stayed with them. Hang on, that means you'd stayed in the army.
Okay. No, I'm still serving as a conscript.
Were you? Yes. Right. Sorry, yeah.
One of our Dakotas was shot down just on the border. We were quite close there. And we went out and, too dramatic to say rescue, but we went out to the ground where it was shot down, and the two crew came back with us.
Was there any opposition to you doing that?
No. Well, what were we doing then? Not a lot, is the truth to know.
You stayed at Lingen throughout?
Stayed there for quite a while. I from there I signed up. I had been home on leave. And I didn't think there was much coming here. So I signed on, I think, for a couple of years. I was quite enjoying life. I used to ride a lot. And but from there, I was posted to Catterick, which was part of Castle, which is Catterick, which was the Royal Army Corps depot. And from there, I was to go on and open up a squadron of the TA at Middlesbrough, which I did. And, I don't know whether you're interested in
yes, that. Yes.
The Barnard Castle, it was a very, very severe winter in 46, 47. There was snow up there, 3 foot deep. And one of the jobs we were given, we were taken in a train that had an engine and a carriage out on the moors, and it was like driving through the tube going through the snow. It had a snow plow on the front, and the snow was higher than the train. Eventually, it could go no further, and we had to get out and dig ahead because a train was reported to be trapped up there somewhere. And I didn't take kindly to this. They wouldn't let anybody go out because they said you can't get out, the road's all cut off. And eventually I fought my way and I managed to get through. And I found no difficulty at all once I got my pass out. The roads weren't cut off at all. And I went down to York and then to Middlesbrough. York was the headquarters of the Yorkshire Guards.
Is that the unit you were joining?
That's the unit I was joining.
And what was the squadron you were from?
I was going to form a sea squadron up in Middlesbrough.
Where was the drill hall?
In Middlesbrough, a place called Newton Street. But before I went up there, I took digs in York. Through this thing, as it turned out, just opposite where the drill hole in York was, down a road that led to the river. And of course, when all the snow melted, the whole place by the river flooded. So had to go to our digs in a boat and go through the upstairs window. I didn't really take kindly to that either. And so I then went up to Middlesbrough early.
Now, you what rank were you? Still a sergeant?
I was still a sergeant.
And were you going to be the PSI, Permanent Staff Instructor? And how did it go at re-establishing? I mean, you were re-establishing the
yes.
They'd only just restarted the Territorial Army, hadn't they?
Well, in fact, the drill hole was locked up. It had been locked up since pre-war. There was a caretaker and he came along, gave us keys, and there was a corporal with me, and we had to go down, we went to the police station, and said, can you recommend any lodgings for us? And they gave us the Christmas house. And we had digs, and then the next day we went and opened up this drill hall, and started sorting things out, and eventually put advertisements in the paper and started recruiting. We had a flourishing squadron there after a bit.
Were they good material, the recruits?
Oh, very good.
Yes. Had they been in the army before?
Oh, well, I should say 75%, yes. Yes.
And did you, what armour did you have?
We had only two or three. I think they were Cromwells.
They were for training purposes.
Training purposes, yes. We had them in the riding school. Because before the war, they'd had horses there.
And were you enjoying this work?
Oh, yes. Very much so. It's great. One was one's own boss, 90% of the time. And exactly what we wanted. We didn't. Given an overall task to do, but how you did it, just did it yourself. And it built up, and I think I was there for 2 or 3 years. And whilst I was there, I then signed on with the further period of Japan. From that day, really, I never looked back.
And so what? Where did you go from the when you did leave? Do you know what year that would be? Was that 50?
Yeah.
Or 51?
50. Oh, no, it would be 49.
Right.
When I left there. And the 8th Hussar at this time was stationed at Leicester on the airfield. And it was very, very reduced.
Was that your basic unit, the 8th Hussars? Yeah. You'd be that was who
That's
you,
right.
That was your thing. Yes. You'd been detached as PSI to it. You say they were very reduced. In what way?
Well, they only had 8th Hussar squadron and 1 sabre squadron instead of 3. Because they were so short of recruits. And when I went back, they were just starting a 2nd sabre squadron. Getting more recruits in. And they had to send, they were told to send a demonstration squadron down to the School of Infantry in Warminster. And I went with that as the Sergeant Major. And that was great fun.
What were you doing down there?
Well, the infantry trained there, and we were an armoured squadron who demonstrated armour warfare and cooperation with infantry. And that sort of thing. And while we were there, they suddenly heard about a war starting in an unknown, unheard of place called Korea. And the next thing we heard was that we would be made up to strength and we would go there.
Now, what was a strength then for the 8th?
It would have been three triple same squadrons, three tank squadrons, and the headquarters squadron. Something in the region of 550 or ranks.
And which tank by that time? Or what tank did you take with you to Korea?
The Centurion, which was a new tank.
Now, were you a squadron sergeant major?
Yes.
So, which squadron were you in at that time?
I was B squadron there.
And you'd be with the headquarter troop then, would you?
Yes.
And you wouldn't be commanding a tank, or would you?
Yes, I had a tank. In the headquarters troop, there were four tanks. The squadron leader had one. The second in command had one. I think the second captain, he was called, had one, and the sergeant major had one.
And what did you think of the Centurion tank then? What was it like? How did it differ from, I mean, was it a step forward on tanks you were used to?
A vast step forward, even on the Comet.
What was better about it then?
Well, it was faster.
How fast would it go then?
It would go, I think, 40 miles an hour.
So that's 5 or 10 miles faster.
It was very fast in those days for the tank. And had an excellent gun on.
What was the gun?
Now, what was it? 76, I think.
Would that not be the same as the Comet, or was it an improved one?
I think it was an improved one. And it altogether was very comfortable and very reliable. Maneuverable, and we were delighted with it.
How long had you had it?
Are we equipped with it to go?
That was the first time
yes,
you got it?
Yes.